Alrighty, who? Cool. So, this has been another super elusive episode for me to seek and crush down, but I finally got her on my radar, and after, you know, many rejections, but I'm glad to finally share that I have an incredible woman who's joining me on the podcast today, and her name's Deepa Daniels, and you know, she's a product leader. She's someone who is so deep in product. She's had an incredibly interesting journey. For those of you who don't know, she was part of the team at Trustpilot, which is super heavy growth, successful startup here from Copenhagen. She then moved on to Zendesk, as many of you will know that company as well. She then went on to Peakon, another super successful kind of earlier scale up. And now she's in a company called Tamigo. Is that how I pronounce it?
Correct. Yeah.
So doing her product hustle. So I have a lot of respect for her. She has, I love product people. So we can geek out on that for hours on its own, because I just love this idea that product is like the epicenter of everything right now in terms of, you know, experience and how everything connects and that whole UX piece, which maybe you'll probably correct me already saying that's wrong, Hacken. That's not exactly what product's about. But hey, Deepa, can I throw it to you just to quickly share a little bit about who you are, maybe a really little bit about your journey. And then we're going to go into one of these three topics, or one of the three topics that we discussed before the call, which I think is going to be super fun to dive into. But firstly, thanks so much for joining, and over to you.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm glad you were persistent and looking forward to having a nice, fun time answering your questions. So a bit about me. Who am I? That sounds very profound. I am currently a product management leader working in business-to-business SaaS in usually early-stage Copenhagen-founded startups. So I find that I like working with Danish founders for value reasons. I am half Canadian, half Malaysian. I was born and raised in India and lived and worked actually in quite a few parts of the world before choosing to live in Denmark for values reasons. So not here for love, but I'm here because I think it aligns well with my values.
Nice.
And we'll maybe talk a bit about that. So I was thinking a bit about myself before this and how I define myself as a product leader. And there are three main types. Of course, there's way more, but you know, we're going to put something in boxes. So there's the innovator, the builders, and the tuners. Innovators are like blue sky thinking. Builders are all about, like, you know, making a blueprint and building a house. And tuners are all about the beautiful fine details. I'm a builder. I love to define.
Of course, you're a builder.
The blueprint and figure out, you know, where are the windows going to be, where the door is going to be, how are people going to move between the rooms. I get a little bored with fine tuning, and to be honest, I'm a bit nervous about like total blue sky innovative thinking. Although I hope to get there one of these years. So yeah, I think that's me.
Nice one. So let's jump in. So this is going to be cool, guys. Anyone listening? So Deepa and I were talking about what should we go deep on and what should we geek out on? And then Deepa sent me this amazing email with like some suggestions, right? So typically you have, you know, how do you pick your team? If you're a manager or if you're an employee entering a company, you know, how do you pick the team that you'd love to work with? We were going to talk about that, but we went, next one. And then the next one was, you know, how do you pick your manager? How do you know who's a good manager? How are you going to get coached? Is the balance going to be right? Is there going to be a lot of support for you? Or is it going to be a toxic relationship? Who knows? But we didn't want that one either. So then Deepa throws this one at me, which I love. She goes, how do you pick yourself? How do you put yourself first? And how do you kind of focus on your progression and a lot of things compounding into that? And let's geek out on that. So I'm going to hand it to you first, though, Deepa, because I want you to set some framework on this so that we can kind of walk around it. But the theme now is, how do you genuinely, instead of all those other things, how do you pick yourself and kind of think about that as kind of something that you can become passionate about?
Yeah, so I think the reason that this one stands out to me the most, or that I wanted to spend time going deep on it, is because it's probably the most personal to me and where I'm at right now. So, and it might be an age thing, although I'm not sure. But
Deepa, you're young, come on.
But as I took a few months off between my last two roles, and I ended up being super lucky. I found a lot of time to read, and I came across some very interesting books, which were actually looking at adult development. So adult development is a field that is quite niche, but there are researchers who follow, well, multiple groups of researchers who follow the entire human life for a control group and then another group. And there are a few that are completed now. It's some of the early ones started in the 1920s, but now we actually have data from like pretty long lives. And I think one of the trends that we see in the world is that, I mean, touch wood, you know, any day could be our last, but in many ways we're predicted to live longer than ever, and we see humans living for longer than ever. So in this possible 90-year life that you have, how do you sustain growth and development over that period? So I think that's, I don't know if that frames it well enough,
no,
but I
perfect,
when I
yeah.
think about picking yourself, so it's kind of like it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And there's a lot of different phases and stages, and what can we learn from people who have been researching and looking at this? Because yeah, potentially learning from others is a smart way to avoid making mistakes. But yeah,
for me to jump in. So, I mean, I just did one with a previous episode with Anne-Sophie from Peagon, and we talked about this idea, like the way that if I reflect personally right now, if we go personal, right? My philosophy right now with being in a privileged position to build a team, and I do think it's a position of privilege because that's a huge responsibility on a personal and also on a business level, specifically being strategic. I love the thrill and the idea that recruitment is not about finding people that can do just the job. For me, it's about building a team or you know, enticing people to join because they bring something that, you know, is exciting for me to learn from. So like, I love the philosophy, hire people that are way better than yourself, and better is subjective. That's more like better in something that you would love to learn more about, or they bring a new skill to the table. But I think what I'm learning is that when you recruit in this way, it's almost self-perpetuating because it pushes, because then it's like, wow, you bring in someone who's got a huge amount of knowledge. You might be the person that needs to manage this person on paper, but you're not their manager. You're like someone that's working with them, and they're almost coaching you in reverse fashion. But you work together to kind of build this insane unit of, I enjoy coming to work because I get to learn from you. And you're a raw executor at X, which might be something, a special field that I could never do, but I'm curious to learn more about. But that rubs off over time, and it adds to your perspective. And you know, I know you and I know a lot. Like, you know, I'm very driven by my work. I'm super attached to what I do. I don't, my personal and business life are super intertwined. And that's maybe a philosophy that I've been thinking of on my personal, choosing myself first, so to speak. But I do it as a win-win scenario, hopefully, for the companies that I'm in. And I learn that way. But that fuels me, because a lot of people ask, Hakan, where on earth do you get all this energy from? It's like, I don't know. It just comes from loving with so much passion what I'm doing every day, because it's not really work. It's like building my life through my work.
Yeah, I really like what you're saying about learning, both from others and I guess from, yeah, filling. Energy is a very interesting topic too. So how do you sustain that drive and passion over, you know, multiple roles, multiple decades? At least it's something that I think about. And I like one thing that I have learned or observed both from reading and from some maybe unfortunate introspection that comes from having a lot of time alone during COVID quarantines, is that there are some like core pillars in life which we cannot neglect for too long. Otherwise, you lose something. So you mentioned the energy that you have, right? So I have definitely experienced that with certain jobs where I just had so much energy and work didn't feel like work and it was amazing. And then until it's not, and you hit a wall, which also can happen. And in those moments, I guess I realized, okay, wow, this is all I have. All I have is my work because I've got so much energy from it. And I, you know, that's not enough to get me through the hard times. And how can I shore up or invest in other areas? And so like the three pillars that are talked about or that become very strong when we look at longitudinal research and that lead to kind of long lives with well-being, not that you're going to feel good all the time, but like overall, so there's financial, which is kind of looking at your career, your growth, I guess your income, potentially also wealth creation for those who are privileged enough to think about and do that. And so that's kind of one pillar. And then there's relational. So that's both a combination of like maybe close relationships, family, friends, community. There's different levels of relationships that sustain you. And then vitality, which is a very interesting one, as the third pillar, which is a combination of mental well-being and also like physical well-being. And the interesting thing about these pillars is they're very interconnected and kind of codependent. So if like, let's take the example of if you have no money, it's going to create stress. It's going to impact your vitality. You're not going to have, and then it's probably also going to impact your relationships at some point, right? So you need to have some amount of financial security in order to be creative, in order to like approach life with a lot of like energy. And similarly, if I, at least I can speak for myself when being very focused on my, my financial well-being. So my career, and growth and climbing the ladder of success. And I'm saying that with air quotes, because I don't really think that that's a real thing, but anyways, so, and then often the relationships have suffered. So in those times when I got a lot of energy from work, I could work fantastic 14, 15 hour days. It felt amazing. Obviously, for someone who is a close friend or a partner, that's not going to feel so great. And if that goes on for too many months or too many years, that relationship is going to suffer. And I might wake up one day and realize, whoops, I'm alone. all of my friends are gone. And now maybe I'm tired and I have nobody around me. So it's this interesting, and I don't like, I have no regrets. I don't think, like, I think there are times when you do need to prioritize certain pillars and certain areas. And I don't think that's harmful. There's times when people will make very significant, like physical goals, right? Like I want to run a marathon. That takes, you know, almost 30 hours a week of running to really train properly. I mean, maybe less, maybe 20, but still
I ran the Copenhagen half marathon last year with no training. That was a terrible idea. I think I had to walk four times. It was the most painful experience. So don't do that, people.
It's more fun if you train. It's definitely more fun.
Definitely more fun and less painful.
But when I talk about picking yourself, I actually, it's very personal for me, and it's about having, at least when you have a chance to take a step back and kind of look at, will I actually give myself a number? So I rate the pillars at least once a month and say, like, how do I feel about this? And if for too many months I'm giving myself a really low score for something, then I'm like, okay, I probably need to put some time and energy here, whether it's in my physical health, right? So maybe I need to put a bit more time there, or if it's in my relational health. And the interesting thing is, if you can, you know, if you can keep them in balance and don't let them go too far, it's actually not that much effort to correct or to come back. But like, if you reach burnout, it can be a pretty painful journey back to feeling like yourself again. So yeah, I think it's maybe I take like a very spreadsheet and pragmatic approach to this, which I don't think is a terrible idea, but I think it's not about anything being wrong or bad with focus. It's just about being aware of where you are giving your focus and your energy to, and maybe rebalancing it once in a while. And I think that, at least for me, is how I intend to have a very long and happy career.
Cool. So this is amazing. So this is like, my brain is on fire right now. Okay. Brace yourself. I'm gonna unleash. So for me, it's about two things: awareness, like you said, but also control. So I burned out twice in my career. I definitely burned out at Plio, right? And it's fine. I learned my lessons as I go, but I did it twice, right? So I didn't really learn the lesson the best on the first attempt, but I burned out because I had this energy and I had this passion. And if I refer to your three pillars, I forgot about health. I forgot about my physical well-being because I was just so motivated by the impact of the work that I thought I was doing and I thought that I had full control of. But in the end of the day, as an employee in a company, a private company, I have no control. One day I can get fired, right? Or anything can happen. The company can go bankrupt. Who knows, right? And maybe anyone listening, if you're in that same position. So like you said, if your company is what's giving you so much life force of happiness, or what makes you think you feel happy, that is so dangerous, because if that gets ripped away from you, then you feel so lost. And I remember when I left Plio, I was lost for 2 months. I had like massive imposter syndrome because there was this feeling like everything that I believed in, these values that I thought were my values, it turns out were not so much my values, they were Plio's. And I had integrated them so much into my life by my lifestyle, right? So I think the control piece kind of hit me. And then when I came to London and I had some time to think for 2 months, that's when I decided to launch this podcast. So the podcast for me is a vehicle, right? So the podcast is something that I can control. And instead of throwing all of my energy into the companies that I associate with, I would rather throw my energy into something that I can control, because I own it in essence, right? And you know, my own podcast can't fire me, so to speak. So you can use this, and I'm using this definitely as a vehicle to do many things, like, you know, kill several things with one stone, so to speak. A, I'm learning. I love speaking to people who are just fascinating. So I get a chance to use half an hour or an hour to listen and learn from people who are very different to me and, you know, hopefully want to connect, and, you know, we keep tabs on each other. Two, I control it in a sense that I can take it in a direction that I think it needs to go in. If you're in a company, you might be working in a function, sales, product, whatever. If you get a mandate that we need to go in this direction, you're not really making that decision. You're kind of being told what to do. And that's important in companies, because that's how you either pivot and survive. And leadership typically knows what needs to be done to keep the company afloat or what strategy should be. So that's the second thing. And maybe the third thing is just this beauty of creation. I think creating something and having the power and the ownership to like just build something from nothing gives a lot of energy. I think that's what's been really fascinating for me. And what I'm doing with this podcast, I hope, and I'm still learning and I'm still open, is that no matter where my career goes, and of course I want to be successful, and CapDesk for me now is a vehicle also. Like, I'm learning about equity. So I've approached CapDesk as a way for me to understand an industry that I've always been frustrated with. Why do employees get no equity? Why when I leave a company, there's all these clauses associated with being a bad leaver? Like, I don't know what the hell's going on here, but no one educates on this. So I think my philosophy has been like, associate myself with brands or companies where I can actually learn something by doing a good job. And the podcast for me is now a vehicle to also capture all that learning, to build a network around that, that I can take with me as my brand, no matter who or when I associate myself with a company. And that becomes, maybe it's selfish, but you know, that is my value piece. And that's why I want to be this employee advocate, you know, employee evangelism. I believe in it and I've owned it myself. And you know, where is it going to go? I have a very clear 7-year vision, by the way. Maybe that's something I can talk to you about offline, but it's super vivid and I just know exactly where I'm going, but I don't know how to get there. But I know what the North Star is for me. I want to do huge things and everything that I'm now doing is getting me there. But it's the journey is also supposed to be fun. If it was super focused all the time, I would be really bored because I would go mental and I would burn out again. So there's a lot of cool things in there, but it's being like super centered. And I think someone told me the other day, I'm curious what you think of this, Hacken, you know, when it comes to like relationships in general, you know, love yourself first. Focus on loving yourself. And when you figure that one out, then you'll figure out everything else. But if you don't like genuinely love yourself and what you stand for as a human being, how can you grow? Because then you're just going to associate yourself with things that you're missing in yourself. Then it doesn't become you anymore. It becomes a pairing. If you lose that pairing, then you're lost again. You keep falling down. You keep falling down. So you need to start. And I'm not speaking from wisdom here. I'm speaking from my feelings, right? You need to like love yourself. And like right now I love myself because I feel super centered. I'm super motivated. And I know what I'm standing for right now. And I'm defending those values. And I defend them fiercely because I believe in them. Does that mean it will change in 2 years? Maybe. Values and opinions are supposed to evolve. So that's my position. I don't know if that's all at all resonates with you, but that's something that I've never done. Genuinely taken the time to pause my career, ambitions, all that stuff, and be like, do I love myself right now? Or am I being someone that I'm not?
Yeah, I really like hearing more about your journey. And I think choosing yourself is it's self-awareness, it's self-love. Because in a way you're saying, okay, you know, this is what I need to feel alive, or this is what I need to, I mean, potentially we can exchange time for money in so many places. And I know that is a very privileged thing, but many of us have the chance to choose where we exchange our time for money. And if you can do it in a place where you are learning and where you feel like you're getting more than just money, that's the best. Yeah. And definitely I think often in the modern workplace, especially in like high growth companies where there's so much passion and excitement, the risk of burnout is very real. And I don't think we can expect someone else to quote unquote protect us. So just checking in with yourself and maybe having some kind of a meditation practice or some way that you actually kind of listen to your body and to how you feel, it makes a huge difference. And I think now as I have quote unquote, maybe as I progress in my career and as I have many people that I'm responsible to manage, I take that responsibility even more seriously. I think I'm even more accountable to be a patient, kind, centered person. And if that means I invest more in my meditation practice, then I should do that. Because if I'm just not feeling it, it's going to impact so many people. So we're not islands. And I like that. We can't control so much, but what we can control is hopefully the actions that we take. So I like that you've built something that you can feel pride and ownership of and control of. And that's super powerful. Yeah. This is maybe a bit controversial, but I've also been reading quite a bit of Marxist theories, and there's a lot of things he says, but one thing which I do like is he talks about the alienation of labor and how you know, and this is, you know, we're going back to the Industrial Revolution, and he was criticizing factories and how they basically put people in an assembly line, and you're like, you're this little person that does one action and you don't see the beginning and you don't see the end. And I think, you know, this is the power of small companies and startups, is where you actually get to feel quite connected to the product, to the outcome, no matter who you are. And I really aim to do that in any team that I'm leading, is like, ensure that there isn't the alienation of labor. People should understand how what they do impacts the outcome and the whole and other people's lives, because that's, you know, that's kind of, that's a really important part of being human.
The big one there is like, and it's being human, right? And it's like, this is a fact. I'm sorry, anyone feel free to challenge me on this in the comments or whatever, but in high growth companies, there is a common thread, in my opinion, of a small mistake. In high growth, you know, maybe you've raised 10 million or whatever money in Series A, Series B. Then comes the hiring spree, right? This, oh, we have 40 available jobs. Why the hell is that exciting? Why is the idea that so many people are going to come in at once, who all have different agendas, all have different focuses? Where is the focus at that point on like, hey, we need to hire someone who is really good and who knows how to coach and knows how to lead the next generation to understand how to pace themselves, what to focus on in their career, how to ask the right questions in a one-on-one interview, how to really zoom in on the people side, right? What I've seen in so many growth companies is that many, many of these guys will hire these young, super ambitious, super hungry, either graduates or maybe they're first, second job, who just want to reach, push. And they love that kind of energy. But then you get a company full of so many people reaching, and they need a direction. And this is where I'm a huge stickler for leadership. This is where leadership needs to really step up, like really be very clear in the communication, clear in the focus, where this is where we're going, this is what we stand for, this is our values, this is why we invest so much in hiring, this is why we take our time, this is why sometimes we fire people quickly because we realize they're not a fit. And but being very vivid on that communication, because if you're not, then these pockets evolve where people are fighting for the sometimes the same thing, right? But I'm very focused on that now. And that's why I'm a big fan now of hiring people who have been through a few of those rodeos before. They've seen these things happening, and they know how to navigate them without like throwing people under a bus just to kind of get the growth and get the next valuation or whatever it might be. Those things are important, but you know, destroying a human's career progression or life is not, I don't think, fully worth it. But that's my opinion, right? And I've just seen it a few times now.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me, because my take on like founders is that it's harder than it looks.
Of course.
And nobody intends to hire and push people under the bus. But hiring is hard to do right. And it's not just the hiring, it's like building the organization where people can build and feel belonging. And like, it's just harder than it looks. And I think it's not just hard for early stage companies. I think maybe the speed makes everything exponentially more difficult, but like there's plenty of chaos in large organizations that are not growing that fast, and people get burnt out as well in that case. So I think maybe I am too pessimistic right now, but I think the modern work life and expectations, like the game, there's this game, right, that says if you work hard and you invest in the company, you're going to be promoted and you're going to, you know, feel good and everything, right? There's some kind of game that's there. And in the last couple of years, I'm just like, I don't know if I like this game, but it seems to be the game that's being played. So it's hard to not, you know, if you're there. I mean, so my take now is just to be conscious of like, okay, this is the game. How do I work within it? Maybe, you know, there's some flexibility. I can bend some rules. I can work with it a bit differently, but I I mean, if you look at any, like, as soon as we start bringing a lot of human beings together, the complexity increases, but also what we can do together is so powerful. So I think hopefully in 10 or 20 or 30 years, I'm going to be a much more experienced leader with more optimism, I hope, about human nature and what's possible. But right now, I just kind of think like, this is the game that we're in, and we just have to figure out how we can, you know, do it with integrity and not, you know, if the board that I'm on is just not working, I need to choose a different board, yeah. Like board game, like, you know, just switch to, like, we do have some control, but yeah, similar to like maybe too much Marxist theory, but I think like the assembly line is not the most human experience. And I think a lot of assembly lines for for other things, which it doesn't look like we're on an assembly line, but in many ways we are also not that
No, human. I think you're super spot on, right? I mean, and it's again, it comes back to that perspective, right? Like, as an employee, you don't understand what founders are going through, and you probably never will until you become a founder yourself, like, or a senior leader, like, because there's so many decisions, there's so many things to keep your eye on. Like, you can't always keep everyone happy, so you need sometimes you need to pick your battles, right? And sometimes those battles are detrimental to other people, but, you know, overall, you know, you want to win the war. It's a weird one, but it's super easy for people to kind of slip into this like negativity. Like, now I completely see where you're coming from. I love it. It's deep.
Maybe my last thought is that I think maybe this comes back to product in many ways, is that I have an immense respect for creation. Mm. Right? Like, if we look at entropy, everything is decaying all the time. So to create, to build from nothing, this is like, it's like magic. And it takes like so much more effort for most cases to build. And when I say build, that could be building a team. It could be building processes. It could be building culture. It could be building products. So I just like, whenever I look at something or approach it, whether it's a new team or a product, it's always like with so much respect for the effort that it has taken to build. It's easier to criticize. It's easier to find faults. It's hard to build. So just always respecting what was built, and the value is, you know, everyone is doing the best they can with what they have and what they know. So whenever those decisions were made, whenever they built that, what they had and what they knew, they did their best. And maybe that's too optimistic, but it helps me.
But it's a good way to finish it. That was awesome to kind of come to an end here. I know that you have to jump off now, but I loved it. This was super cool. Just kind of like a bit of a different style. I loved it. So it was really good to kind of go deep on that with you. But Deepa, huge thank you for this. I'm a huge fan, and I'm super keen to keep watching your journey. And love, if you have any book recommendations, sounds like you got a lot of them, please fire them across, and I'll put them in the episode notes, because sounds like you've been reading some really cool stuff that I'm quite confident several others would find a lot of value out of.
Sure thing. Thanks for your persistence, and actually for, you know, for putting yourself first and doing something that you love. Really, yeah. Admire that.
No, I respect that.
Have a good one. Bye for
Thanks,
now.
Thanks, Deepa.